IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I am Pranay and today I have with me Anupam. And both of us are discussing an issue which all of us are reeling under, which is petrol prices. So I'm sure this issue will connect with you. Before we get started, Anupam, I remember we have a prediction market platform and I had predicted in the beginning of this year that petrol prices will reach 100 in our city. So have I won that bet already?
Yes, you have. Or at least I think in Bangalore, it's just hovering around 99. So it's just probably a matter of days. But it has touched 100 in many other cities for sure. Mumbai, in one city in Rajasthan, it touched 100 way back in February itself, end of Feb. Mumbai, it is at around 102 rupees. I don't know in Bangalore because I've not really been out and filled petrol in quite some time. So
that's true. Yeah. So anyways, I'm hoping to make a lot of crinkles using that particular prediction. So let's see how that goes. Anyway, so we'll get started. So we thought we'll just do a conversation on this. And there's been a lot of conversation about how we should get petrol under GST. In fact, the Indian National Congress also mentioned that they are going to stage a protest demanding that petrol prices be brought under GST. So let's discuss that itself today, Anupam. And before we begin with bringing it into GST, can you give a brief overview of how the retail petrol price is structured currently in terms of what we pay at the counter, how much of it goes to governments and how much of it is actually for the product?
Yeah, I think that would be really interesting to look at. And I did that just before recording this podcast. So the figures are as of June 1st. I'll just give you a breakdown. So the price, international crude oil price, if it matters, was about $70.69 per barrel. But what that really means is for us, that amounts to about 32 rupees, 40 paisa per liter. Okay, so that's just the crude oil price. Then you add in the refinery processing, the OMC margin, refinery margins, freight costs, logistics, transportation costs, etc. All of that adds to just about 3.6 rupees per liter. And at the end of it, you have the fuel price after all of the processing, which is ready to be sent to the petrol pump, is at 36 rupees per liter. Okay, so that is the first thing to take note of. The price at the fuel pump is about 36 rupees to the liter. Now, you add in, this is the first really big component that jumps out at you, is this union government taxes. So the union government taxes as of now adds up to about 33 rupees per liter. And that's, you know, that's quite big. It has almost, 90% of the fuel price, right? Which is, goes to the thing. That is 33 rupees. We'll break that down slightly later on as to what that combination of excise duty and road cess, we'll break that down. But that's about 33 rupees charged by the union government. Then you have a commission to petrol pump dealers. That's 3.8 rupees per liter. That's basically the profit that they earn for filling up your, you know, your vehicles. So all of this adds up to about 72.7 rupees per liter, you know, which is the fuel price before you add in the state's tax. Now, the states add VAT amongst many other things, but we'll just keep VAT for now. But they can add different kinds of cesses. And this VAT, value added tax, varies from one state to the other. In Delhi, for instance, it's about 30% on petrol and 16 point some percent on diesel. In Karnataka, which is relevant to, you know, you and I, in Karnataka, it's about 35%. They, in fact, Yediyurappa just increased it in the chief minister, increased this in the budget that just gone past in February 2021 from, I think, 32% to 35%. So that adds up to about 22 rupees per liter. Okay, I'm rounding off at 21.8, but let's round it up to 22 rupees in Delhi and about 25.5 rupees in Karnataka. So there you have it. In this, all of this adds up to fuel price of about 98 rupees in Karnataka, right? So just take that original price, as I said, with the price that goes to the petrol pump is at about 36 rupees per liter. The price that you finally pay is about 98 rupees per liter. The difference is largely the taxes that you pay in terms of for the union government and the state government.
So this falls under the common observation many people have had over the last few years, right? That whenever governments face a resource crunch, they will just increase the excise duties on petrol and diesel. So it's like, you know, the last resort of sorts. Whenever governments face difficulty, this happens. Why do you think that's the case, Anupam? Why is this the resource that all governments target?
Because, I mean, it's very simply put, this is one of those products which have the least elasticity, price elasticity of demand, right? Which means that even if they increase prices, people will continue to buy it. If the government, and they do try, you know, taxing other products, people will just stop buying those products. But petrol, along with, you know, cigarettes and alcohol, are the that's why they are the cash cows for governments, because irrespective of how much they increase the tax and the price, people still cannot do without it. And therefore, they know, governments know that they can get away with it and still continue to earn money from these items.
True. And also because this is sort of not a direct tax, it's a sort of a consumption tax. So the effects are felt over by, you know, millions of people who use vehicles. So that effect is sort of dispersed, and hence governments get away with that easily compared to other goods where the effect might be felt by a smaller number of people. So no one organizes, everyone just complies, right?
Correct. So if you look at, again, the number of people who pay income tax versus the number of people who, say, pays indirect tax for petrol, you have a wide difference between the two. So if you raise income tax at a time when, let's say, like the pandemic, when there's a severe economic contraction, people will be up in arms. And that looks very bad for the government. But on the other hand, you can increase your excise duty on petrol and you can get away with it, as they have. I mean, yes, there are a few people who are now, when it kind of touching 100 rupees, that psychological mark, as they say, of 100 rupees per liter, yeah, people are taking notice. But largely over the years, over many years, the governments have gotten away by increasing prices. So as we know, the benefits are concentrated. That is, they can take that extra revenue and probably give some form of relief to people who are under distress during such times. But the costs are distributed among a large number of people.
True. And I think we have done an episode on this, Sarthak and I, before, where we discussed the entire retail petrol price, how it's structured, and what you were saying, Anupam. Like, broadly, retail petrol price is a sum of price charged to the dealers, plus the excise duty, which is collected by the union government, plus dealer commission, plus state's VAT, right? So these are the four components of the retail petrol price. And within the excise duty itself, there were other components, right? So there is a basic excise duty. There is a special additional excise duty. There is a road and infra cess, and there is an agriculture and infra cess, right? So these are four components within the excise duty. And what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is, within this excise duty, the basic excise duty and special additional excise duty components have reduced. These are, by the way, parts which go into the divisible pool and hence are shared with all the state governments as well. And instead, the road and infra cess and agri infra cess have increased over the years. So for now, for example, a few months ago when we'd done that episode, excise duty was 32 rupees per liter. Basic excise duty was just rupees 2. The additional excise duty was rupees 11. But the biggest chunk was road and infra cess 18 and agri and infra cess 1. Right? So we've seen union governments cornering more resources even within these taxes. So Anupam, the sinister thing in all this is, in spite of all this, people say that petrol prices are market determined since 2012 or 13. How is this market determined?
Not at all. And there are various reasons for this, right? Unfortunately, the market determination is only, it seems to be that when the prices go up, when the price of international crude prices go up, it's promptly passed on to the consumer. But when the prices go down or is even stable, unfortunately, that benefit is not passed on to the consumer at all, because it is a highly distorted market. I mean, one, you have such heavy government intervention in terms of taxes. And two, of course, you have despite the deregulation of prices by the government, you still have just very few players who are largely who follow the government diktat in terms of pricing. So there's not a lot of competition, and therefore I think the market economics is out, just out of whack when it comes to petrol prices.
Absolutely. I don't think we should even call this market determined, right? There's nothing which is left to the market here. It is completely government controlled prices and through the mechanism of taxes, cesses, and all that, right? So,
yeah. And that you compare that, so that's again on the supply side. And on the demand side, as you've said, it even cannot be market determined because there are no substitutes. For petrol and diesel, it's not that suddenly a large number of Indians can actually start going by bicycles or other forms of transport. So therefore, it's not even on that side the market is distorted because there's not enough substitute, and therefore the elasticity is extremely low. It's very inelastic in nature.
But Anubhav, maybe that is slowly changing in the sense that with electric vehicles and electric two-wheelers, right? Forget about the four-wheelers. With many companies going into it and governments giving lots of incentives for that, not that I'm in support of those incentives, but I think over time we'll see another alternative emerging. And it does 100 rupee petrol price is not helping people in any case, right? So at the margin, I guess people are now considering whether they should buy an electric two-wheeler.
That's correct. I mean, of course, the pace of change of something like this will be slow. But eventually, if the government keeps us up with such high rates of taxes, and generally, if petrol prices are this high, people will start switching over at the margin to electric cars and electric bikes. And probably this is one of the best things that could have happened to that industry, because it's inducing a demand there.
Yeah, but as in all public policies, for this small benefit, there are lots of losses. So what are the losses that people are suffering because of this 100 rupee prices, Anupam? I guess inflation is picking up.
Oh, yeah. Inflation just came out, CPI inflation, and it's the highest it's been in X number of months. I forget. But I'm sure since 2019, just before the pandemic, inflation has picked up. Now it's about 5 or 6%. We'll have to check. But inflation is definitely picking up now for two reasons. One is, of course, there are supply constraints for a few of these aspects because, factory various lockdowns and so on, factories are not able to work. But I think a real big factor is petrol prices as well. And this is pretty much expected. Every time when petrol prices inch up, it definitely has a significant effect on inflation. One is, of course, people just have to pay more for petrol, but unfortunately, it doesn't end there. Fuel prices is one of those things which has cascading effect on all other products and services in the economy. So you can just imagine if it costs me more to get to work, I will demand compensation for that extra, cost in some way. So I might charge higher wages, which then means, the company will have to start charging higher for its other services, etc. So this will be throughout. So you can see the effect of higher fuel prices in vegetable prices, for instance, because the cost of transportation has gone up. Public transport obviously starts costing more. You could look at, many services will start increasing the prices and so on. So there will be a cascading effect, and all of this starts showing up in what you'd call as headline inflation. And it is showing up now. So one of the, real benefits of lower fuel prices is just that people will have higher disposable income. And if people have higher disposable income, then they can spend more, and that can kickstart the economy. And in many ways, that would probably mean that, the government can again get more taxes through a better economic better economic activity. So it just depends on whether you have that kind of long-term view to try and get more taxes through overall increase in economic activity rather than just on one or two products. Apart from that, of course, you will see that, some sectors will get specifically hit. As we spoke about, vehicle sales will get hit if you have higher fuel prices because they're complementary products. And I think that's fairly clear to see. And therefore, you might have job losses there and so on. So that's one particular sector that might get hit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that, there is some merit to sort of taxing petrol higher in the sense that there are also environmental consequences. But at the current rate that we are going with, that marginal cost versus marginal benefit ratio is way out of whack, right? Like, we've gone way over where it could have been a beneficial thing. And now it's just become a favorite instrument of governments to tax more and more and extract money right from the pocket of many, many millions of consumers. And that's the scary bit.
That's right, Pranay. So now let's actually explore this idea one of the things that's been gaining traction is, why don't we bring petrol under GST? Of course, this conversation we've had since the kind of beginning of GST, and every time we've been talking about goods and services tax. So I remember in 2015, 2016, this was in vogue. A lot of people spoke about the pluses and minuses of having petrol as part of GST. But let's, even before we go into how to do it and how to go about it, let's even imagine, or let's first explore the potential benefits of including petrol under GST. And is there any harm? I mean, is there something that we are not seeing? What is your take on that, Pranay?
Yeah, I think one necessary thing that we have to see is that when you don't have a product under GST, there will be this cascading effect, and you have taxes on taxes, arbitrary taxes, and there will be tax arbitration, which is going on. So the one clear-cut benefit of that is just that there will be more streamlined functioning. So as that's one, from an economic angle, what are the other advantages, Anupam?
Yeah, so correct. As you mentioned, it will bring down this arbitrary taxation. So as we have seen, AgriCess was something which is new, which is put by the government and which was increased in just the previous budget. And so next year around, you might have some other a reason for which the government needs money and therefore can put an additional cess, right? And there's no end to that. State government suddenly might decide they want to do, I don't know, a sari scheme or some bicycle scheme, and therefore would want to fund that and might introduce a new cess on this. So in order to reduce that level of arbitrary taxation, I think bringing it under GST would bring in just that much bit more discipline into the entire thing, right? The other thing is, I think this is a fairly common sense argument, which is there's no specific reason as to why we should treat GST as, petrol as any different from other goods, right? So you bring it under GST, you treat it like a good, you can decide on whatever rate that you want, but it is another good, right? And so therefore should be part of the goods and services tax. There are many other products within the GST regime which have, for instance, as you spoke about, which has externalities, so it's not alone in that. And so making this exception to liquor, I don't want to touch liquor here because that might touch another nerve. But ultimately, I think, all of these products should be bought under the same kind of taxation regime. But finally, and I think this is more important, is that if we bring it under GST and we, you decide on a rate, and we'll, discuss that later, but you decide on a rate and you keep it low, for instance, then it will force fiscal discipline. And that's probably the most attractive aspect of all of this. It'll force fiscal discipline on both the union government and the state government, right? So there will be some loss of revenue in probably the short to medium term, and therefore states will have to learn to adjust with this lower revenue. So they might have to look at new places from which they can raise taxes. For example, can cities look at municipal tax? Your property tax, in better property tax? Can union government widen the tax base, etc.? So there's a whole bunch of other things that they can do. Of course, all of this coupled with just lower expenditure, maybe that's also a really good outcome.
Yeah, and just to add to that point, right, there is a marginal cost for public funds, right? And the fact that for every money that the union government raises, it costs nearly ₹3 to the society, right? And this is an estimate that Kelkar and Shah write in their book. So what it means is that just having more money in the hands of people through lower taxes will have disproportionately more gains than the government appropriating the same amount of money.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So come back to that disposable income argument. We might differ on this, but I would always prefer people to have more money in their hand than the government. And especially at a time like now, when you have, for instance, a demand crunch along with many other things going on, I would prefer that people have more disposable income so that they can go out, they can buy goods and services, which will help kickstart the economy, which will help industries, which will then help employment generation, and therefore will again increase income. So I see there's a lot more value with people having this additional income than government taxing it away.
Right. But you're talking about all these things, Anupam. Now let's get to the brass tacks. How do we do this, right? One thing is that we've entered this very bad equilibrium in the political economy thing. And the fact is there is a direct perception by state governments as well, by union government as well, that if you bring this to GST, the state governments are going to lose out, right? And there is I remember reading this article by Sushil Modi, quoting him at the floor of the house, where he was mentioning that there will be a huge loss of 2 lakh crores for each state. So we should do this after 10 years and not now, right? So how do we overcome this is the central question. Any thoughts on that point?
Yeah. So if we look at the current, again, let's just start with what is happening now. You said 2 lakh crore. Lost to the state. In 2019-20, the both the union and state governments combined had earned about 4.25 lakh crores by taxing petroleum products. So when you bring it down to, let's say, 28% tax rate instead of the current 162%, there will be a significant loss, right? So which means that's also our starting point. That's not the way to go about it. You can't suddenly bring, this is where the political economy kicks in. You can't suddenly bring a product which is being taxed at 162% directly to a 28% regime, right? So the way to go about this would be to then bring it under the GST. You tax it at the highest possible slab, which is 28%. And then the remaining aspect, which is the loss, you cover it through the, you know, you cover it through a special cess. And it's, you know, this is probably a very rare occasion when you and I might actually argue for a cess, but it is necessary for that transition to take place. So, you know, if you bring it under 28%, you add another, you know, 30% or so as cess. I wouldn't say the entire amount, because you start with a slightly lesser amount, which will then, you know, you pass on the benefits to the consumer right away. And it, as we spoke about, I think there's a lot of benefit in passing on that benefit right away in an economy which is crunched. But fine, that can be argued and negotiated. But ideally, the answer or the way to approach this would be bring it under the highest slab in GST, put a special cess in the meantime for to compensate for this. And that cess, we can, you know, over time, we can reduce that. And it should, you know, let's say you take a broad enough horizon such that states and the union government can plan for it. But, you know, over a 10-15 year period, you bring that cess down to zero.
Right. So, I mean, just to sort of recap it, you're talking about a similar mechanism that happened in the original GST, right? The same issues were there at that point of time as well, that why would states give away their own taxation powers? But a nice mechanism was found back then where they decided that for certain goods, which were two kinds of goods, either the goods that government considers luxuries or the goods that government considers as sin goods, for them, the taxation rate was over and above the highest GST tax slab, right? So you had above 28%, you also had a compensation cess of, let's say, 22% for a certain size of a big vehicle. And that particular 22% amount which was collected was put into this compensation cess fund. And that fund was then distributed to all states using a formula, right? And states were assured right up front when this negotiation was happening that they'll receive a 14% year-on-year increase for the next 4 or 5 years. And that was the tipping point which made state governments agree for this particular transition. Now, what you're saying is we can do something similar for petrol prices as well, right? So if state governments are assured of a particular return that they get, and that money is collected by actually charging petrol overall at not much lesser rates than what it is now, right? It's just that it will be 28% GST rate and maybe a 30% compensation cess, which there is a defined path to decrease over time, right? That 30% should become probably 10% in the next 10 years. If that path is provided, then maybe state governments would agree on this. Did I say that right?
Yes, absolutely. That's precisely what I'm suggesting. And there are many other products, as you said, which have this special cess rate. Tobacco products famously have a special compensation cess, such that people will, so that the states will still kind of benefit from that additional rate. And you can probably justify it for petrol as well, given that, yeah, as you said, there's an environmental and cost, there's an externality, etc. Whatever the reason be, yes, you can put in an additional cess, but that has to replace all of the other cesses that the current union government is putting, right? Because the many of the cesses that the union government levies is not shared between the states. So first thing that the union government has to do is say, we'll remove all of that cess, bring it under GST, just one compensation cess, and that compensation cess is equally divided between the union and states. And then have a path for reducing this from whatever the agreed upon amount is, 30% to, let's say, you say 10% in 10 years, fine, I was going to be slightly more ambitious. But that's for political negotiations to take place. And ultimately, over the next 10, 15 years, you can still look at petrol as more or less a normal product with a GST slab, probably plus something extra on top of it, a cherry on top.
Absolutely, yeah. So what we are saying is that this conception that bringing petrol under GST will necessarily lead to a huge loss for the state governments is sort of a misconception, right? There is a transition path that can be mapped out so that the state governments are not facing a lot of losses. And most importantly, people have more money at their disposal, right? So in order to get that objective, there are ways possible, right? And politics is the art of the possible, and we should think of those solutions rather than people blocking them. But one complicated thing that has happened, Anupam, I guess, is that there is a breakdown of trust between union government and state governments since the GST, right? Because of the recent events that transpired on compensation cess and the union government saying that, it will be difficult for us to compensate you, and the whole saga which went on thereafter. I guess that complicates things now, don't you think so?
Yeah, that definitely complicates things, which is why, something like trust has to be earned over time and kept up because it's going to help you out later. But this is all under the assumption that the union government want to do this in the first place. I'm not really sure of that, which probably starts the complicated process. But let's assume if the union government wants to or has the political will to carry this through, then there are even ways to earn back the trust. In fact, this can be used as an opportunity to earn back that trust. For instance, can you make a big, large upfront payment as part of this, which will also help states, let's say, fight the pandemic in some sense, whether it's for, then the states can use it for whatever purposes, right? And they are short of funds. So there are ways to earn back that trust as well and get them on board.
Yeah, I guess maybe things related to ways and means advances that RBI gives to the state governments is one way to earn their trust back. My only concern is that we can't do the same thing that was done last time and hope for the state governments to be on board, right? Like, there has to be something more done in order to earn that trust back. Maybe even, like you said, union government unilaterally reducing the road and infra cess and agri infra cess on petrol will probably be a signal that, this they want to transition to a regime where union government doesn't corner the extra money.
Correct. Yeah, that's a good starting point. In fact, it can do that for, here's me being extremely hopeful, but in fact, they can do that for other cesses as well. Whether it's an education cess put on other products and say, we will share this money. That can be one of the negotiation techniques.
Absolutely. Yeah. So on that hopeful note and Anupam dreaming about all cesses going away soon, we can end this episode. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is at IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at TakshashilaINST or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach Podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.